Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, and we're giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true every Saturday from 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific Time. We stream live at richarddugan.com and newspress.com. We're archived on a2zen.fm, and we're rebroadcast on a2zen.fm, and we're archived on richarddugan.com, the radio show page. Plenty of opportunities for you to find out about what's going on. We have a link to every one of our guests, and so that you can go and find out what they have to offer and see what resonates with you, and we encourage you to do that. It's great to be with you here on the program, as we are always enjoying these programs, like Christmas morning to me, because I get to dive into, if you will, the world that is my guest's world and the perspectives that they have to share and ideas and concepts and ways in which they're making their world and that of the people that they connect with better moving forward in this lifetime as we are. Lots of things are changing. Lots of things are unfolding, and you need to find out what you can do to be a part of that, if that's something that you would like to do, or find out how you can maybe help to make your life unfold in a way that maybe it hasn't before. And today we're going to talk with a returning guest. She hasn't been on for about 4 years. It's nice to have her back with us. Dr. Susan Shumsky, and she is with us on the program today to talk about not only Divine Revelation, which is also the title of her book, but also about the work that she has been doing since the last time we spoke. And I would like to welcome you back to the program. It's nice to have you with us.
I'm so thrilled to be here with you today, Richard.
Well, we're certainly happy to have you with us, and look forward to a very stimulating conversation here on the program. Again, it has been about 4 years, and certainly you have been about all kinds of different things. Why don't you catch us up on what you've been doing since the last time we talked?
Well, I've been very busy with various book projects. My book Ascension came out. Let's see, How to Hear the Voice of God, Ascension, Instant Healing, and now The Power of Auras is coming out. And then in a month from now, The Power of Chakras will be coming out. And I will be doing a cruise coming up here in April. I'm producing a cruise seminar at sea coming up here in April, a trip to Peru coming up in June. So lots of things going on.
I'm just looking at the book titles that you have, as well as the latest one that will be coming out shortly. One of the things that, you know, we encourage folks to do is to spend time quietly meditating or whatever modality they wish to use and listen to that still small voice. And I think about the book, How to Hear the Voice of God. I remember sharing my own personal theory, if you will, as to that still small voice, and that is that it will never, ever, ever lead you astray. It may challenge you, but it will never hurt you. Someone said to me, yes, but there are all kinds of people who have voices in their heads, you know, listening to these different voices, telling them to do all kinds of what we would conceive of as rather atrocious and abominable things. And I thought, well, okay, maybe we need to address that as far as being able to discern the voice of that higher self, if you will, the voice of God.
Absolutely. The thing is, Richard, that there's four places that you might be receiving your messages from. There's the spiritual world, the mental world, the astral world, and the environmental world. So you might be getting your message from any of those places. And that's why it's so important to learn how to tell the difference between that true voice of spirit, the true divine voice, and other voices in your mind. So learn how to test and trust the real divine voice. Make sure that it's not your wishful thinking, your ego, an entity from the astral world, some other voice that's leading you astray, perhaps the voice of the thought forms of people around you, peer pressure, and so on. So it's really important that you learn how to contact, be in touch with your true higher self, and learn how to get that real divine guidance that you're just talking about. You said it will never lead you astray, that still small voice, and that is true. It may challenge you, as you said, but it will never guide you into some harm or to lead you astray. And that would be the true voice, the true higher self speaking to you. And when you have that connection, you are very blessed, especially if you are willing to trust it, to follow it, and to take its advice.
So is there a way for us to test these voices? What can we do to protect ourselves from the voices that we don't want to hear, we don't want to follow, and know that we're tapped into the voice that we know is part of our life's purpose and the guidance throughout our day-to-day lives?
Right. So the thing is, Richard, that I have developed a 10-test system to test the authenticity of the inner voices and to be able to trust that true divine voice. And in my 10-test system, all 10 tests have to be passed in order for you to know for sure that it's really the divine voice speaking to you and not some other voice. And in addition to that, you're talking about protection. So it's very important that we learn how to be able to keep our energy field closed off to the lower astral levels of mind and open to the spiritual world. And if you like, I can give you an affirmation right now to help your listeners to be able to do that. Would you like that?
I think that'd be most helpful.
So this is an affirmation that I recommend that you say this and you pretend as if your higher self is saying it rather than your ego self, rather than the small self. Just when you're saying this affirmation, say it as if it is truly the voice of God speaking to you, through you, is truly your inner voice, your higher self saying this affirmation. So it goes like this. I am in control. I am one with God. I am the only authority in my life. I am divinely protected by the light of my being. I close off my aura and body of light to the lower astral levels of mind, and I open to the spiritual world. Thank you, God, and so it is.
And to that end, we would then feel much more confidence, if you will, in asking for guidance and knowing that we can trust the voice that we would then hear when asking for that guidance.
This will be helpful. I mean, it's a step in the right direction.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, it's real important to learn the 10-test system, which I don't really have time to teach in this one little interview here. But
No. That's
fine. You can
fine.
Certainly read about it in my books, How to Hear the Voice of God,
mm-hmm.
and also my book, Divine Revelation. Those particular books are geared towards helping people to learn how to open to their inner guidance and trust it, test it, and so on.
I know that a lot of what we talk about on this program tends to go against the status quo, if you will, of our institutions that have been around for centuries. Be that as it may, it all seems to ring true from my perspective that we've always had the answers within us, but we were always told to search without ourselves on the outside. And you have been sort of bringing that back into vogue, as the term might go. And what I'm gathering is that more and more people are really beginning to understand that whenever they do go outside themselves, it's more to seek confirmation for what they already know. And we do seem at times up to a certain point until I guess we've built up we've had enough experience that we don't need to do that anymore. But in the meantime, we do that. It's really kind of helps us to know that, oh yeah, well, I knew that, but it's just kind of nice to hear that from you.
Exactly. That's very true. Well, right now the world is going through kind of a transition and we can't depend upon external things anymore so much.
Right.
People are finding that their pensions and their bank accounts are dwindling and they can't depend on that. They can't depend upon the institutions that they used to depend on. They don't trust the government. They don't trust medical care. You know, we are in a state right now in the world where we have to begin to rely upon ourselves and not depend on others for advice, not depend on others for saving us, curing us, whatever.
Right.
We have to learn how to listen within to our own intuition and develop our own connection to spirit so that we can make decisions with peaceful confidence, knowing that we're on the right track. And just relying on other people for these answers, it just doesn't work anymore. So that's why it's vital at this time for people to learn how to open to spirit and to trust their own higher self for the answers.
Well, the other day we were watching some movies, and one in particular came up, and we started watching it. And as it progressed to the first 5 or 10, maybe 15 minutes, I said, I can't watch this anymore. It's too depressing. I mean, this was a movie about similar to what you're talking about, although it was probably based upon real events in the last 5 or 6 years in this country. It was focusing on specific individuals and the story that unfolded. I said, I can't watch this anymore. So we turned it off and we moved on to something else a little more uplifting. And I think that that's what's happening with a lot of folks, is they're starting to realize that there are certain things that they really don't need to fill their heads with, if you will, or their hearts in terms of the places that they go, the things that they see and watch, the things that they listen to, the things that they read, for that matter, even the people that they surround themselves with.
Right. You know, in ancient India, the ancient sages of India, they advise people to keep company with the holy, keep company with people that are going to uplift you, be around people that are going to help you, that are going to nurture you, that are going to be your cheerleading team, so to speak, rather than hanging around people that are just depressing and drain your energies and have psychic vampires around you and so on. So it's a good idea to choose your friends wisely, to choose what you put into your head wisely, you know, to choose what movies you watch, what books you read, what TV shows you watch, and just try to do things that are more uplifting for you, that are more healthy for you. And, you know, also what you put into your body, what you ingest, the food.
Exactly. It's funny. We seem to put more focus and attention on that which we put into our bodies through the mouth in terms of eating and drinking than we do in terms of all of those other aspects. And I know that we've all had these experiences where we may walk into a room. Nobody's there right at that moment, but we walk into this room and all of a sudden we get this sensation, this feeling, because we can feel the energy that's still there, still hanging in the air, if you will, from whatever transpired maybe just moments ago. I'm curious as to, shifting gears here a little bit, your perspective and understanding of the various, I'll call them the various minds. There are different, people use different terms, and I'm hoping that I can adequately explain this if necessary. But there's the modern mind, which is currently what's out there doing whatever it chooses to do. And then I've heard of what's called the planetary mind. Do either of these ring a bell to you?
Well, I understand what you're talking about when you say planetary mind, or collective unconscious, collective consciousness, the thought forms of humanity.
Mm-hmm.
And we're all influenced by these collective thought forms. For example, the thought form of men, for example, being superior to women. That would be one thought form that's held in the consciousness of humanity, or the idea that unfortunately in the media specifically, the idea that if you're young, if you're vibrant, if you're beautiful or handsome, that is a superior being, that's a superior person to someone who is more elderly. The media, for example, doesn't seem to give any credence to wisdom, the wisdom of the elderly, so to speak, or to or people who are not fitting the ideal physical beauty. And there's a lot of prejudice against people who don't fit into that scheme. So these thought forms of humanity, I just, you know, gave you a couple of them, but there's a long list of them, really.
Oh, yeah.
And unfortunately, they run a lot of us. We are motivated by these beliefs that are completely untrue.
Are there also techniques that you are aware of, or maybe even that you've created, that can help us to, I'm not sure what the right terminology is here, disconnect or shift or transition from what I'll use the term the modern mind to that higher consciousness, planetary mind? And again, you use whatever terminology or word you want, but I'm finding that it is so important to find ways of doing that, because it is so easy to get drawn back into that mind because it's what we were born and raised into.
Right. So we have many influences, both internally and externally, that have created habit patterns in our minds. And these habit patterns run us. You know, we no longer have are able to fulfill our desires and manifest that which we want to achieve in life, not able to succeed in life, because we're still operating under these patterns, habits, conditioning, brainwashing that we received through various sources, the media, our parents, our religion, the collective beliefs of humanity, and so on. So in order for us to have a mind of our own, so to speak, it's important for us, number one, to listen to that higher self, listen to the still small voice within, and number two, to heal these limiting patterns, habits, and beliefs that we have acquired through not only this lifetime, but through several past lives as well. So I have specific methods that people can use. For example, in my latest book, The Power of Auras, I've got tons of healing prayers for people to use in order to overcome these habits and patterns and various anomalies that are in their energy field as a result of past brainwashing and experiences. So we can heal these patterns and beliefs and habits, and we can also heal thought forms and psychic ties and facade bodies and various other things that are in our energy field, like psychic shackles, psychic plates, psychic jails, psychic nets, psychic hooks, for example, also psychic vampirism, tentacles. There's all kinds of things that are made of thought forms, made of thought stuff that get deposited into or created by our own minds that are in our energy fields that need to be healed. And we can heal them. We can have a clearer, more vibrant energy field. We can have greater energy, greater charisma, greater good fortune and good luck, more success, more prosperity. And it's possible for us to transform our energy field into something that is quite magnetic, quite influential, quite charismatic. And there are methods for doing that.
Well, I think that it's real important that we start doing those kinds of things to start making those shifts, because what I am sensing, and I'd like your observations as well, is that as the world changes and transforms, whether it be what transforming as you watch it on the news, or whether it's transforming in terms of the way in which you view the world around you as it is unfolding on the news, I think that it would behoove us all to seek out those ways of, again, as we've already stated, I think pretty clearly, listening to that still small voice, following the promptings. That was one of that was one of the things that I remember going back to. I think it was the early 80s. I was going through this one program, and they had us write out a statement, you know, that of something that we wanted to do. It was real important to us, and we talked about spiritual things and so forth in this program. And so I wrote down that I was going to listen to and follow. And what was interesting was that I made that second statement much larger, because it doesn't do any good to listen if what's the point of listening, let alone asking for guidance, if you're not going to follow it.
Exactly.
So I think that we need to learn how to do that. We're going to continue talking here on the program with, and it is Doctor, is it not?
Right, Dr. Susan Chomsky, yes.
And if I may, tell our listeners, you're a doctor of what?
Doctor of Divinity.
Okay. And I would venture that your studies took you to a wide and diverse array, if you will, of various belief systems in terms of at least the understanding thereof.
Right.
And when you speak with people who come to you or who connect with you via, I guess, email or Skype or whatever format or modality that you choose, do you find that people are you aware that people are beginning to kind of throw off, even if it's just a little at a time, some of the trappings of some of this institutionalized orthodoxy, if you will?
Really, this transition has been going on for the last 50 years, Richard.
Mm-hmm.
Ever since the 1960s, when this incredible human potential movement began.
Yeah.
In the 1960s, when people began to look into Eastern wisdom, Eastern spirituality. And I was a part of that. I was a hippie. It was the 60s. I was a flower child.
Right.
And we were all seeking spiritual enlightenment. We were seeking to change the world. We were seeking for a revolution in consciousness, and thinking of John Lennon's song, Revolution, you know. You got to change your mind instead, he says in that song. And that's what we were all seeking. That's what we were all aspiring to. And that little revolution that we undertook really has changed the world. Over the last 50 years, wow. I mean, I remember 50 years ago when you went into the grocery store, and what did you find? Well, you found meat and potatoes and iceberg lettuce and some oranges and apples, and there weren't any fresh vegetables. They didn't exist, believe it or not.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to believe now when you go into a grocery store and you're confronted with all kinds of fresh foods and really healthy foods and so on.
Right.
50 years ago, there were two esoteric bookstores in the entire country, period. There were no esoteric or metaphysical books in any mainstream bookstore.
Wow.
Now, the esoteric bookstores have gone out of business because they're all because the esoteric books are all now in the mainstream bookstores and everyone can get them.
Yeah.
There were no yoga classes, martial arts classes. No one even knew what the word yoga meant back then. No one knew what the word meditation meant back then. It's a different world now. We live in a completely different world. This world has changed. Consciousness has expanded and exploded. People are really, really cognizant about organic foods. They're cognizant about planetary ecology and so on. And it's become a completely new awareness in the world that is increasing and increasing. And I think it's a very positive direction, personally.
I was reading that, reading somewhere that there are movements that have taken place down through the various centuries, and the focus of those movements and those individuals were certainly important. And every once in a while, you know, somebody who was like the head of the movement, you know, was either died or was killed and became what they call a martyr. But what I was reading about in particular was the fact that instead of a movement led by an individual, and you used the term already, a revolution, that if there is a mindset, what's the phrase, that you might be able to kill the founder, but you can't kill the idea, something along those lines. And I think that that's really what's happening, is that the powers that be presently in the institutions and so forth, I think they have reached a level of perplexity, because this, as you've stated, this is worldwide. But is it still in the minority, or would you say that it is, has it come close to reaching at least 50% of the population, or is it in the majority yet?
There have been some surveys done, and increasingly people are saying that they believe in psychics, that they believe in possibly that God is not just out there somewhere, but also within, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it is increasing all the time in the population, as these surveys have shown. It depends on really which which particular thing we're talking about.
Right, true.
I think that people in general are much more accepting of the idea of, for example, yoga exercises than they are of God is within.
Yeah, that's rather interesting. We're going to continue this conversation. I am talking with Dr. Susan Chomsky, the author of Divine Revelation and many other works, and her website, if you'd like to find out more, divinerevelation.org. That's divinerevelation.org. I'm Richard Dugan, and this is Tell Me Your Story. Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. I am joined by my guest, Susan Chomsky, and she has a website, and that website is divinerevelation.org. She has a number of books available if you'd like to find out more, how to hear the voice of God, Ascension. She also has Instant Healing, and also The Power of Auras, which I am somewhat familiar with. And I would like to maybe pursue a couple of these lines of talk, if you will, in terms of auras. I'm familiar with what an aura is, but I'm not quite sure of why it's important to understand and know about, say, my aura.
Well, I think it's very important that we know that we're not just this physical body, that we have several layers of our energy field. That we have this physical body that in Sanskrit is called the Anamaya Kosha, and that means the food sheath, which means that it's made of food, sustained by food, and becomes food for something else after we're gone. And that is just one of our sheaths, one of our energy fields, let's say, mm-hmm. or our layers in our energy field. And there are other layers, though. There's the mental sheath, or Manomaya Kosha. There's the intellect and ego sheath, the Jnanamaya Kosha. And there's the Pranamaya Kosha, which is our pranic body or energy body. Prana is also, which means life force energy. It also is chi or ki, sometimes called chi or ki. So we have this energy body also, the pranamaya kosha, and we have the anandamaya kosha, which is the causal body, which is that which causes us to be individuated, for us to be separate from other individuals. So we have these five, what they call the fivefold sheath, or kosha, the koshas, they call that in Sanskrit. So we have these layers, and why is it important for us to know because we want to know who we are, really. The most important thing is for us to have self-realization, for us to know who we really are. And you can't really know who you are if you don't know that these are all aspects of yourself. And secondly, really more importantly, you want to keep your energy field clean and clear, because you'll be happier and you'll have a better life.
Let me ask you to relate how auras and chakras work together.
All right, so the entire pranic system is in this one layer of your energy field. It's called the pranic body, or the energy body, the pranamaya kosha. In that energy body, which is, by the way, a subtle energy, it's not, you're not going to see it under a microscope, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You have an entire system of energy pathways called nadi, N-A-D-I, and you have plexuses, or hubs, central hubs of energy called chakras, the C-H-A-K-R-A, chakra. And these are what are giving life to your physical body. It is said in the ancient scriptures that when prana is in the body, that's called life, or that's the definition of life. And when prana leaves the body, that's the definition of death. So this body is, this physical body is just a shell. It has no life in it whatsoever. It's your pranic body. It's this energy body that gives you life, that animates your body, that creates heat in your body, creates cold in the body, creates hunger, creates thirst. The senses are in your subtle body also, in the mental body. But the pranic body is what animates you and gives you life. And this prana, or life force energy, or chi, or ki, is running through this pranic body in these conduits of energy called nadi. And that is what is giving life to your body, and is what's regulating the various organs and things that are in your physical body. It's what's giving it life.
I know that there are a lot of people, and this kind of goes back to something you mentioned earlier in the program, who have been involved with a lot of these different aspects for many, many years. So for them to see our society embracing meditation and chakras and auras and all of these different aspects, you know, might be interesting, but it's no big deal to them because they've known about and have been using various techniques to, I've heard the term cleanse their chakras, cleanse their auras and those types of things, just as you would cleanse the physical body in the same, you know, metaphoric concept. But there are also those who are just coming on the scene, if you will, who are just learning about these things, but they don't seem to be quite as skeptical up front. I think they're more curious and maybe even more open to at least hearing, about these things. It's less, magic or mystical or fairy tale-ish today, as opposed to 10 or 15 or 20 years ago, when I think the term was woo-woo. Way, you know, not
woo-woo,
too long.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. Not too long ago. So I think that these are very important aspects that we're beginning to understand better. And obviously, there are all kinds of, as well, different healing modalities that are available. But they all seem to, I'll say, resonate with the same basic structure, if you will. And even the word structure is the wrong word, because there is no real structure. It just is what it is. That's one of the things that I love about, for example, when talking about various health modalities, I always bring up 5,000-year-old Chinese medicine. There was no FDA 5,000 years ago. They just knew that it worked. And you, Susan, you just know that these things work, that they're there, that they can be manipulated, but they can be adjusted, if you will. For example, you know, you're talking about the chakras and your aura. And I'm wondering the correlation between the colors of the chakras, which are the seven or eight basic colors of the rainbow, and the colors of one's aura. Does one just have one color, or can it be layers of colors, or however that it breaks down? Susan?
All right. So,
oh, there you are.
Okay, so let's just talk about aura colors for a moment.
Okay.
The color red in general means life, energy, passion, heat. It means vivacity and sex. Okay, so that's the color red. The color green is a healing color, calming. It is a very balanced color. It's a color of nature. So it gives health and well-being. The color blue is a spiritual color. It indicates higher aspiration. The color yellow is an intellectual color. It indicates highly developed intellect and intelligence. Orange is a social color. It means being like a social butterfly. So, and let's see, violet is more like a very stately color, but also is a spiritual vibration. And white is very, very highly evolved spiritual vibration. So these are the basic colors and their basic meanings. Now, I have two chapters actually in my book, The Power of Auras, that go into color and how you can use color to enhance your energy field, and also what the colors mean in great detail, what the colors in a person's aura mean. So that's in reference to auras. In reference to chakras, I'm sorry to say this, but the colors that people think in their mind about this rainbow is pretty bogus. It really has nothing to do with the chakras. The chakras are, if you read the ancient scriptures of India, it goes into extreme detail about every little detail of the chakras and what color each little aspect of the chakras is. And it's not a rainbow at all.
Okay. Now, I have also read where you have your main, we'll call them the seven chakras.
Right.
But then you also have minor chakra points all throughout the rest of the body, in especially at the joints, the elbows and the knees, the hips, et cetera, et cetera. Are you familiar with those as well? Because it seems to me like from what I was reading in this one particular book that was showing diagrams of these other energy points, that a lot of times these kinds of energy points are used by healers all the time in the work that they do.
Exactly. Actually, every single acupressure point is a chakra in your body. So Chinese medicine has it all mapped out. They have the entire system of energy and these plexuses of energy, which in Chinese medicine are the acupuncture points. And these are all chakras. In my book, The Power of Chakras, which will be coming out next month, I discuss the 14 chakras that are delineated in the ancient scriptures of India. There's the seven major chakras that you're referring to, which are the base chakra at the base of your spine, the sacral chakra, which is in the area of the sexual region, the navel chakra, which is solar plexus area, heart chakra, which is in the area of your thoracic heart region, the throat chakra, which is in your neck and your throat, and then the third eye, which is in your forehead area, and then the top of the head, above the head, the Sahasrara, with the thousand petal lotus, or the crown chakra, they call that. So those are the seven major chakras, and they are related to the endocrine glands, they're related to your physical body, they're related to the regulation of this body, and they're also vital in the awakening of what we call Kundalini, which is the spiritual energy that rises up your spine. And as it rises up the spine, it is, shall we say, opening these various chakras and enhancing them. And eventually, when it goes all the way up to the top, it does create spiritual awakening.
The one thing that I have found so fascinating about all of the various alternative forms of medicine within this construct, unlike orthodox medicine, there are no contraindicators when using more than one modality because they're all using the same energy. That's one of the fascinating things I found. You know, you don't have to worry about side effects either.
Yeah, there's no real side effects when it comes to energy medicine, and that's a great thing. And that's why I think it's important for people to study it and to start to integrate it into Western medicine. It would be, and it's starting to, that's starting to happen, I'm mm-hmm. happy to say.
I've heard it said that there are some doctors who may not be embracing it, but they can't. They will tell the patient, well, keep doing whatever you're doing. I don't understand it. It doesn't make any sense to me, but obviously you're doing something that's working for you, so keep doing that.
Yeah, the only problem is, unfortunately, it's not covered by people's insurance.
Well, there is the that's the downside. Even under the new Affordable Care Act, it's not covered. But I have a feeling, and this goes back to, again, something else that I was reading. I have a feeling that in time, as more and more of these things become more commonplace, they become more accepted. I mean, it took, I can't remember how many decades, for example, for chiropractic to finally be accepted on insurance plans.
Acupuncture. You're right about that, Richard.
Yeah, acupuncture also is in most, on many health plans, is now accepted, and maybe acupressure as well. So right. I have a feeling that as they begin to see, even if they don't get FDA approval, they don't see any side effects, they don't see any downsides. I guess the one frustration with all of us, for all of us, and that is that when it comes to insurance, they want to take care of the big problems rather than deal with preventative health care so you never have to deal with the big problems. That always struck me as very strange because I always thought it was more expensive to deal with the big problems.
Well,
but
we have the vested interests.
I guess that's what that's all about.
We're yes, talking, it is.
We're talking here with Susan Shumsky, and she has a number of books available for you to check out as well, and we would encourage you to do so. Matter of fact, the website is divinerevelation.com, where you can go and certainly not only see some videos, listen to some audio as well, find out about the various books, how to hear the voice of God, ascension, instant healing, the power of auras. You were also saying, too, the power of chakras is going to be coming out shortly. Exploring meditation, obviously the book Divine Revelation, exploring chakras as well. And that's just to name a few. I also came across this one book here, Miracle Prayer. And it's basically 9 steps to creating prayer that gets results. And it kind of goes back to the question that I asked some time ago about the purpose, if one can actually place a purpose on it, of meditation. I would often ask that question, well, what is it that we're trying to achieve? And I finally received an answer that resonated with me, that made sense. It goes back to the beginning of this program as we were talking about listening to and following that still small voice. That has always been sort of my understanding of, if you will, the core of meditation. And of course, that can bring on many other things as well, a relaxation and different things of this nature. Let's talk about prayer in this context. A lot of people pray for things. They pray for healing. They pray for relationships. And it's almost, sometimes it's almost to the level of what I used to hear back in the 80s and 90s on radio programs when they would have psychics on. And the majority of the questions were about relationships or jobs or money or moving, you know, that kind of stuff. Tell me about, maybe we'll start here, the purpose of prayer.
Well, there are many purposes of prayer, but mainly it's to change some kind of condition. People don't pray for things that they already have. People don't pray for things that they know they're going to get. They pray for things that they're not sure whether they're going to get, or they pray for things that they know need to be healed or need to be changed about their life right now or about other people's lives. They may pray for other people too. So they're praying for transformation is basically what they're praying for. And in fact, we're creating our own destiny and our own reality through every thought, word, and deed in every moment. Lord Buddha, in the very first verse of the first chapter of the Dhammapada, which is the most important scripture in Buddhism, he tells us in that first verse, all that we are is the result of what we have thought. Once again, I will repeat that because it's important. He says, all that we are is the result of what we have thought. And he continues on to say that it is made of our thoughts. And he says that when a person speaks or acts with a pure thought, then happiness follows him or her. And if a person speaks or acts with an impure thought, then unhappiness follows him or her. So, indeed, what he is saying is that we're creating our own destiny and our own reality through our thoughts, through our words, and through our deeds. So we are 100% responsible for what we have created. And we're creating it moment by moment through every thought, word, and deed. So there are no victims. There are only volunteers. We are creating everything ourselves. And moment by moment, we continue to do that. So what prayer is a way for us to focus our thoughts in the direction that we want them to go into and to make statements of truth, at least the method of prayer that I teach in the book Miracle Prayer. Mm-hmm. Is about making statements of truth that help us to change our mind and thereby change our destiny.
Hmm. That is another aspect that I'm starting to understand more about as well. And a lot of this we compartmentalize when we talk about it on these programs, but it is quite literally all interconnected. I mean, there you can talk about prayer, but it's related to meditation. It's related to the chakras. It's related to healing. It's related to, I think that the one thing we go back to when we talked about the modern mind versus the planetary mind is that as we begin to understand how interconnected we are, we begin to develop a greater sense of that planetary mind. That I think the example I heard was, paint a picture, let's just say, of yourself. You know, look in the mirror and paint a picture of yourself. And so the individual will paint a picture of themselves. But what they've left out is all of the, I'll call it all of the supporting cast that keep them going. From the food, from the sun, from the earth. And so if you did the same thing with a tree and a, you know, it would be the same thing. What is it that sustains the tree? And so to draw a picture of a person and just draw the person is incomplete when you're thinking about it from the planetary mind.
Well, that's very true, Richard. The fact is that we're all interconnected and we're definitely dependent upon everything around us. And the life force energy, that which gives us life, which I was discussing earlier, prana is in the breath, and it's also in the sunlight, it's in the food, it's in, it is within anything that gives us energy.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the life force energy that is sustaining us. So we cannot live without food. We cannot live without sun. We cannot live without breath. And all these things, the pranic energy flows through these and gives us life and gives us robust health and well-being. So if we're eating well, good foods, if we're getting enough sunlight, if we're getting breath, if we are breathing properly, if we're learning how to breathe in a way that we get greater oxygen and greater pranic energy, then we will have a more robust life. We'll have greater health and well-being and happiness.
Hmm.
And I talk about that in my book, The Power of Auras. In fact, I have several chapters to help people to enhance their energy and increase their energy in their field.
On your journey to this point, tell me about some of the miracles, if you will, maybe even from a supernatural perspective. My mother asked me years ago if I'd ever had any supernatural experiences, and I couldn't say yes or no, only because I sort of took the tack or perspective, if you will, of my views of Jesus and his miracles. That's just the stuff he did. He didn't think anything of them. I'm not saying I do miracles. I'm just saying that I have, what I've seen in my lifetime, I would not put under the category of supernatural. It's just what is.
Well, that's an important point, in that every day is a miracle, every moment is a miracle. Mm-hmm. The birth of a child is a miracle.
Sure.
A flower is a miracle. A tree is a miracle. This body, which repairs and sustains and maintains itself, and which broken bones get knit together and heals itself. These are miracles.
Yeah.
It's not a miracle. Just wake up in the morning and look around you. Everything is a miracle. But yeah, I've had a lot of amazing spiritual experiences in my life, and they're mostly experiences of the divine presence or experiences of divine beings who come and give me tremendous amount of love, light, energy, healing, wholeness, oneness. But I've also have had very interesting incidences when I listened to the still small voice and followed its guidance, and amazing things happened as a result of that. And I really like the fact, Richard, that you are emphasizing so much, not just listening to the inner voice, but actually doing what it tells you to do.
Yeah.
Because that is not easy. It's actually very challenging to do that.
It is.
Because the still small voice, which is God within you, speaking to you, is going to give you challenging assignments. It's going to stretch the edge of your envelope because it wants you to grow, to evolve, to become everything you can be. And because of that, it will ask you to do things that are really, really stretching your envelope. So, you know, I really recommend that you do follow that kind of pathway, that you do trust that inner voice and actually do what it tells you to do.
If you've just joined us, we're talking with Dr. Susan Shumsky, and she has a myriad of books. Basically, you could create your own library with with the volumes that she has available. Divine Revelation is just one of many works. One, of course, we've been talking about, of course, How to Hear the Voice of God, and we've talked about auras and chakras and healing. Let's talk about ascension. In one of my interviews some time ago, we were talking about this whole aspect of ascension and how I had been hearing how we need to prepare, we need to do the work, or, you know, again, listen to the still small voice, follow the promptings, and da 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 da. And my guest said that we don't need to do any of that. We've already ascended. And then I was thinking, well, if we've already ascended, this doesn't look anything like I thought an ascended being would be experiencing with all of these things distracting us from the true purpose of life. Tell me about what ascension is, what it means.
Okay, well, people have their own idea of what ascension is, apparently, if somebody thinks that we've all ascended.
Yeah.
I take a more traditional viewpoint of what ascension is. Ascension is becoming an ascended master. And Jesus was our exemplar of somebody who became an ascended master. That's somebody who, either before death, at death, or after death, transforms their physical body into a light body. They become a light being. That light body, when they do take on that light body form, there's a big flash of light that takes place. And then the person, after their ascension, they're able to appear to anyone at any time in any form and to assist and guide them. And they have become an ascended master. And this is a tradition not only in the West, but it's also especially a tradition in Buddhism, where they call it the rainbow body. When a highly evolved soul attains the rainbow body, people see the phenomena of the rainbow, like a flash of light, for example, that happens. One interesting incident, if you have time, I can tell you a small story about one ascension that took place in the 1800s.
Please.
Okay, well, there's an amazing saint who is, his name is Ramalinga Swami. And he was from Vadalur in South India. I visited that place, and especially visited because I knew about him and I wanted to visit there. He was a very, very great saint. There's many amazing experiences about him and tales about him. And one thing was that he always wore a dhoti, really. It's an Indian dress. But he wore it around his head and everywhere because he did not cast a shadow. He would not cast a shadow on the ground. And he wrote poetry, and he wrote about how he had ascended. He wrote about how his body had transformed into a bliss body and a light body. And he described the different stages of ascension and how his body transformed into light. And he was a very generous soul. He ran a hospital home for the elderly, and so on and so on. He did a lot of good works. And then he was not really very old when he decided he was going to ascend. He said, I'm leaving. I'm not going to stay around here anymore. And he said, I'm going to go into this hut. I'm going to go into this hut now. And I want you to lock it up with a padlock. Nobody open it. And I would like you to keep this eternal flame glowing. Keep this flame going. And continue to make it shine forever, this light, this lamp that's outside this hut. And I want you to sit here and pray. And tomorrow morning, when you open up this hut and you unlock it, I'll be gone. All right, so they did that. You know, they meditated all of the night. And then all of a sudden, in the middle of the night, they saw a flash of light come from under the door. A violet light, just flash, big flash of light. And then the next morning, they opened up the hut. They unlocked it and everything. There's no escape. There's no windows. There's no way he could get out. And he was gone. And the police came and investigated. And there was a newspaper article about it and everything. And I read that article. I saw it. You know, it was posted there at that place. And the police concluded that he had disappeared into thin air. That can only happen in India, by the way.
Well,
but that was the conclusion of the police.
Yeah.
And that is ascension. That's what ascension is. Okay?
And to me, it is something that I've certainly read about on numerous occasions. I'm sort of a student of the ancient wisdom teachings. I'm rereading what I like to refer to as my primer, which is Autobiography of a Yogi. And it's, to me, quite fascinating because those types of things are commonplace there, which I find fascinating. And yet, I feel as though, there's a part of me that feels as though I was sort of cheated when it comes to my education. The reason I say that is because I don't know about what went on in many of these other countries around the world down through history. That they certainly had plenty of time. They had me for 12 years, you know, and could have made it interesting, to say the very least. And so there's a part of me that feels a little bit as though I didn't get the full education I could have learning about these kinds of things. And I have a feeling that it had more to do with personal dispositions within the educational institution rather than the desire to actually teach me about something. And I really find that is probably more true even today than it was when I was going to school. And I'm not sure what it is that they think they're hiding from us.
Well, you know, school is only as good as the teachers that are teaching. And if the teachers are not educated in these things such as ascension and spirituality and so on, and also because of the separation of church and state, and, you know, that's some of the reasons, but also even to learn about things, even from a intellectual perspective about other cultures and so on, unfortunately, it's not really emphasized.
Yeah. And I, you know, again, not necessarily wanting to cast aspersions or anything, but I just feel as though, gee, you know, there's a part of me that feels a little bit like I would be so much further along had I been exposed to those kinds of things. However, I have had the great privilege of being exposed to them in this part of my life, to where, you know, in maybe one sense, it doesn't matter now because I've found it anyway. and I want to share that with other
people. Exactly.
Yeah. And I know that you feel somewhat the same way as well, that you want to share this wonderful awareness and understanding with others as well. I think that in time, you know, we may very well really, I think our society will grow in a direction that is, again, very beneficial for all of us in that regard.
And I'm so glad you brought up Autobiography of a Yogi, because that's my favorite book. And I've been listening to that audiobook. There's an unabridged version. I've been listening to that book these days as well. And, of course, Babaji, the immortal master.
Oh, yes.
The ascended master, Babaji. He is my inner teacher. He's the founder of Divine Revelation. He's my guide. He's the one that gives me guidance on a daily basis.
Well, I'm just, like I said, I'm fascinated by all of this. It brings things together. I'm rereading my version of Autobiography. I think it's considered to be unabridged as well. It was actually recorded back in 1972, and I managed to make a copy. And I listened, and I've actually been searching for one of the original recordings, be it on vinyl or on cassette, of this particular version read by a very specific reader, just because of the way he presents it. And that kind of goes back to what we talked about in terms of surrounding yourself with those things that support and uplift you and so forth. And I know, I don't know about your version, Susan, but, and I'm sure Ben Kingsley does a great job. And yet I would rather listen to the voice of the gentleman that read my version, just because there's, you know, I just have a connection. I've never met the man who read it. I would love to. But again, just re-listening to that as I did as a young person in my teens and early 20s, it just brings back some wonderful memories, remembrances of what I had listened to, the images that I saw as I was listening to it. I think audiobooks are absolutely phenomenal. And I'm curious if any of your works are if you've recorded any of your works.
Yes, as a matter of fact, I have audiobooks of several of my books. If you go to my website, drsusan.org, drsusan.org, you'll see that in the section where you purchase items, there are some downloadable packages. And in some of those downloadable packages, you will find full unabridged audio books.
I often wonder, it's audio after all, why would anybody need to abridge it, you know, and shorten it up? I mean, I can understand Reader's Digest and all of that, but my goodness, it just seems to me that, you know, put it all in there and let people sift through it as they will. Let me ask you before we wrap up our program, and of course I wasn't asking these three final questions when I first interviewed you 4 years ago, so this is new for you as well. Who is Susan Shumsky?
Well, Susan Shumsky is a being who's temporarily inhabiting this body, who came on Earth apparently to help people to listen to the still small voice of God within and to help people to heal themselves and to find spiritual awakening and to, if they choose, to become spiritually enlightened. You know? So seems to be what I'm doing here.
And what is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you are doing now?
Well, what I would really like to achieve is to help as many people as are willing to begin to open to this divine presence, to begin to listen to the still small voice within, and to begin to thereby enhance their life and be guided by spirit on an everyday basis in a very practical way.
And how powerful are we as human beings?
Well, if you recall earlier in the show, I was saying that Lord Buddha tells us that all that we are is the result of what we have thought. That's a pretty big statement. What that means is that we create our own lives ourselves. So I would say that we are all powerful. I would say that we create everything. So if that's true, I would say that we are a lot more powerful than we think we are.
Hmm. It sounds to me like that revolution will continue on through each one of us as we share the ideas and continue the movement forward, if you will, to a better world. And Dr. Susan Shumsky, I want to thank you so much for taking time to share with our listeners and me here on the program. It's been great to have you back.
It's my great honor and pleasure, Richard. I've enjoyed it tremendously.
And again, the website, actually, you mentioned a second website, and it was drsusan.org?
Correct. That'll take you to the same place. It's just easier to spell.
Okay.
drsusan.org.
drsusan.org. That's drsusan.org. And you can find out about all of the various things that she's doing, the work that she's doing, the books, and so forth. I'm Richard Dugan, and this has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love to Lal.